All right, we could begin taping, or at least begin the taping of this particular one. What I thought I'd do is review for you. We came up to slide number nine. We're talking about religion in general. What about religion in general? We're talking about comparative religion. This is religion in general. So let's take a look at some of these theories. This is review. We already went through this, but I thought I'd review it. Five theories of religion was animistic, where there are spirits behind things, that people thought there were spirits behind rocks and creatures and objects. Nature worship, where people worship the elements of nature, creation, since they didn't understand them. There was original monotheism. Some thought there was a belief in God right from the very beginning, one God. And in some cases, they believe he's above all gods. There's also, I'm getting feedback on this, you might want to cut it back just a little bit. I'm hearing feedback anyway, I don't know if you are. There's magic, was another one, that the belief that in magical forces that control the forces of nature. So there, again, that which was mysterious, they tended to associate with religion. They worshipped it, they did obeisance to it, and they also sacrificed to it and honored it. And then there was wish fulfillment, that there really isn't any God, but people made up a God so they could feel better about themselves. Sigmund Freud, remember, believed that religion evolved out of guilt. Marx said that man makes religion, not religion makes man. And religion says, this is by Hutchinson, that man is sick and each one has his own diagnosis and prognosis. All religions seek to focus on who man is and what is the meaning of life. I think it's really profound. Another one, all religions realize the need to restore man to a higher spiritual state. Four structures. These structures are according to Hutchinson's book, Paths of Faith. Myth, remember how their beliefs would be transmitted. Second one, under four structures of religion, is ritual, symbolic actions of the believers. The reverence and devotion is an example. Morality, by the way, I gave you a new sheet of paper to insert since my previous one had left off point number two. So you should have that. You might want to just cash out pages 3 and 4 and put the new 3 and 4 in. Number three, morality. What rules do they go by? What are their set of rules? What are their morals, do's and don'ts? And number four, community. How do they interact with one another in a common bond? Do they believe in coming together? Do they believe in worshiping God apart? Is it kind of an individual religion that you just kind of show up at the temple when you want to? You just come and bow down and say your individual prayers when you want to? Or is it something you do as a community at times, community worship? Expressions in religion. We talked about the theoretical expression of religion. That's how it is, what is said and what is taught is the theoretical. You have the practical, what is done, what each person is asked to do. What might you be asked to do in our church community? What might you be asked to do? Anybody? What would you say? Keep the Sabbath. So keep the Sabbath day. And what does that entail if you keep the Sabbath? What's a spinoff? Anybody? What do you do on Sabbath? What major thing? Come to church. So what are you expected to do? Keep the Sabbath, come to church. What else are you expected to do? Expected to keep the holy days. Expected to keep the holy days. To serve. Come to church and serve. Tithing. So there are a lot of things that are expected. Things that are due. And you're expected to follow God's moral rules, the laws of the Ten Commandments, love your neighbor and love your God. Both of those together, which are delineated by the Ten Commandments in its basic raw form. So we are asked to do certain things. Thirdly, sociological. How does that religion interact with other religions? We have tended to be closed as a religion. And we certainly are not ecumenical, and we never will be. But how do we relate to others? The more we reach out to others, outreach programs, the more we show we have a connection to the world. We're all on this huge spaceship, Earth, as we hurl around the sun, right? We're all on this same spaceship, Earth. So we're all together in that sense. All humankind, in sense, are your brothers and sisters. Because as far as I know, all people alive today can trace themselves back to Noah. Right? This side of the flood. Everybody on the Earth. So, but we're distantly related. Very distantly related. on this side of the flood. We do have a common bond. We are humans. And it is amazing. You know, people thought that human beings didn't have any warmth, especially in New York City, and especially cab drivers. You know what one guy did? One reporter actually went and tried out seeing if reporters would truly be honorable and truthful. And so what he did, he pretended like he was a foreigner, and so he would get this cab to take cab driver in New York City, take him for a ride, and then he would stop and he would, you know, pretend like he didn't know how much money, ask him how much it was, and he would just put money out there. And the guy gave him the correct change. And then another time, he asked the cabbie to just take him to a certain place, which is only like a block away. And the cab driver said, "Oh, you don't have to have a cab. You can just go walking down here. It's just down that way." And he was amazed. And what he found out was in the majority of the time, these men, these people, were honorable. Well, there's some wouldn't have been, maybe 15%. But most of them were honorable. So all I'm saying is that how we connect to the world, we need to connect to them in a way. Do I need to change the battery? Okay. How we interact with others, we need not be afraid of them. We always need to be wary, and we always need to be cautious, and we always need to be careful. If you're a girl, don't stop and help somebody on the side of the road if you're by yourself and they look like they're broken down, because some people will break down. Some evil men will break down deliberately and wait to get you. So don't help them. Don't stop. I look carefully before I would decide to stop, especially if my wife or children were in the car with me. There are a couple of us guys in there, big strapping guys, we don't worry about. I'm not necessarily strapping, but I might be big. Okay. But anyway, if a couple of us are together, then I don't mind as much risking it. And we have stopped and helped people with flat tires and so on the side of the road. But be careful, because we live in a society where, because iniquity, sin abounds, the love of many waxes cold. And we have to be careful we don't just pull into ourselves and only be into ourselves. Also have to realize there's a world out there too. And these came, Robert Elwood's Many Peoples, Many Faiths brings out these points. Now we talk about objectives of religion. This is where we came to last time. This is new. What does that religion want to take you to? What is their objective? What is their goal for you? All right? So some religions look within the world. They look for fulfillment here and now. Examples are Taoism and tribalism, which tend to look for meaning and fulfillment of that meaning of life in the context of the world today. Tribalists will say what your main goal is to fulfill your destiny now. So if you live to a ripe old age and you die with your moccasins on or your spear in your hand or whatever it happened to be in tribal religions, if you happen to die in that way, you fulfilled your course. But if you die of some sickness or you die in battle or somebody beats you, an opponent, you may not have fulfilled your destiny. So there are various things, and they're common things, like you can't have children. Oh, you must be cursed by God. So if a woman didn't fulfill her role of having a child, being a mother, she somehow was less than a woman. That's just some current thought. But anyway, that's example of not fulfilling your destiny. They look within the world. Examples, Taoism and tribalism. Beyond the world, their religions, two of them, a couple of examples, Hinduism and Buddhism, they look for fulfillment out of this life. Everything in this life tells them, deny who you are, deny what you are, don't look to this world, deny your senses, deny your feelings, and try to be released from this life. And so their view is to look beyond this world. Okay, so that's their view, beyond this world. Resist the temptations. You'll see Buddhists and others, and of course Hinduism has many ascetics. We study Buddhism, which sprang from them. You'll find that the Buddha once ate so little food, one bean a day, that he said when he went to touch his stomach, he actually touched his spine. Can you imagine being so thin that when you put your finger on your stomach, it actually touches your spine? It goes right through. You can feel your bone, your spine, through your stomach. And he said he didn't wash himself so long that dirt fell off of itself. Do you know how thick dirt would have to be on you for it to just fall off? That's what he did because he was told that's the way you might be able to find God. He was trying to find God. And then he came, he almost died in one of his fasts. And he finally came, his disciples came and revived him with some rice type of material. Rice food, and he realized that was not the way to go. But even he, in Buddhism, still has many ascetic practices, self-denying. Release yourself from this world and look to the world ahead. No intent to advertise any programs out there. All right. And within and beyond the world, these focus their attention on both. And that's where we would be. Christianity, Judaism, Islam. Within the world and beyond the world. We focus our attention on both. We try to live decently now. But we have hope for the world tomorrow. So that's those are our objectives. Live an honorable, decent life now. Be the best you can be now. Borrowing that from the army. Be the best you can be now. And then, in the future, look for God's kingdom to come. So we look, we keep our eyes, we set our affection on things above, not on things on the earth. But even though our affection is on things above, we still, as individuals, live every day to the full. Do it with all your might, whatever your hand finds to do. Live joyfully with your wife, you know, whom God gave you all the days of your life. Rejoice, have an abundant life now. So we believe in both. Okay, let's take a look at some similarities in religions. First of all, there's a belief in a supreme being. Most of them believe in a supreme being or some supreme being or beings. So that's a similarity. There's also the claim of divine incarnation. Some religious founders claim to have been born in a special way. You know, Jesus Christ was born as an incarnate of was made flesh. Some will say their God came and came into someone. The Hindus have Krishna. Krishna is one of the avatars of Vishnu. Vishnu is one of the three-in-one God of Hindus. So Vishnu came into various creatures and became various creatures and walked among them. There are others that have claim of Taoism. Lao Tzu or Lao Tzu is said that he was born old. That's a tradition. He was born as an old man. So there are different ones that have different stories about a claim of divine incarnation. The Japanese emperor is supposed to be the son of the gods. Supposed to be the son of the gods in Shinto. There's also the claim of supernatural origin of the founders. We mentioned that. That they, some, even if they weren't incarnate, that they had some supernatural origin. Sons of the universe or sons of heaven or whatever. There's a claim of divine revelation. Several claim their books are divinely inspired. The Quran, of the book of the Muslims, by the way, they like to be called Muslims, not Moslems, like to be called Muslims. And the Muslims are the people who follow the faith of Islam. And Muhammad claims that he had heard all this information from God, from Allah, or Allah. He heard all this information, and it's the divine writing or the divine writing down of what he had heard. So there's divine revelation. The Vedas of the Hindus, V-E-D-A, Veda. The Vedas of the Hindus are supposed to be inspired, and that which everybody believes. And then they have a claim of inspired scripture. So divine revelation, I received it from God. That which I received from God. And number five, claim of inspired scripture. What we have is inspired scripture, written down or preserved. Reports of miracles. So again, a number of them have miracles reported, things that were done that were miraculous to draw people to them, particularly Zoroaster, I believe, is supposed to have healed the king's horse, and the king therefore converted. And Zoroastrianism was the religion of Babylon and Persia, that area, when the Jews were in captivity, and some think that they had an influence on Judaism. Community of believers is sacred. The church is holy. You know how the Catholic Church defines itself? One holy, Catholic, apostolic church. Holy. You know what God calls you? Holy brethren. So the community of believers is sacred. The people who come together are sacred. The principle of the golden rule is found in many religions. In Confucianism, it's called the silver rule because it's a do not. That which you do not want your neighbor to do to you, don't do to them. So that's merely refraining from doing bad. The difference between that and the golden rule that we believe, Matthew 7:12, is immense. It's one thing not to do bad to somebody, and it's another thing to do good to them. God's golden rule encourages us to do good. Whatsoever you would that people should do to you, do also to them. All right, so principle, the golden rule, and it's found in many other religions in various ways. Hope of a new universal religion. Many of them hope that the whole world embraces their religion. Many of them would like the whole world to embrace their religion. In other words, they think they're right. Hope of that their religion will eventually envelop the entire world. And belief in an afterlife. Belief in an afterlife, that there's something beyond this life. Some will say about one-third of the world or maybe more believe in reincarnation, and I have this book entitled Coming Back, and why you should believe in reincarnation. Now, one girl who knew my daughter's best friend saw how we treated our dog, and she said, if I believed in reincarnation, I want to come back as the Antian's dog. She saw how we treated our dog. We did treat her well. And my daughters called her princess when she was alive because we treated her so nicely. But a belief in afterlife, that there's something beyond this life that you have to look to, most of them. All right, take a look at some of the populations. The populations of the various religions. You'll notice over here that Christianity, including Catholicism, Protestant, Eastern Orthodox, Pentecostals, AI, the independent groups, I have to go back and get that one. But anyway, Latter-day Saints, Jehovah's Witnesses, and so on, 33%. 33% of the world. This is world population. Islam, 22%. Hinduism, 15%. Mostly India. But they've branched out. Various forms. Non-religious, including agnostics, secularists, humanists, and so on, 14%. 14% of the world does not believe in anything. Buddhism, 6%. Chinese traditional. Now, mind you, there are how many billion, more than a billion in China already, okay? But because China was so dominated by communism, they pushed aside a lot of these religions. And today you will not find that many traditional Chinese religions. But the influence of Confucius and Lao Tzu that we'll study is still over China. Okay, but not in a religious way. And then you have primal or indigenous religions, including African, is only 3%. And then other would be 3%. I don't know what the other is, maybe atheists. Would be the other. So that gives you a breakdown of religion in general around the world. What I used to have my students do, I had a map of the world. And when we had time, I'd give assignments, and they would go, and I'd give them tips where they could find it. They would go, and they would color the code, the map, according to where the major religions were, and give you a really nice view of where they are. But this is good, too, this pie chart. Well, here it is. Sorry. This is the map. So you see here, and by the way, primal religions are about 245 million, Hinduism 900 million, Buddhism 360 million, Chinese traditional 225 million, Shintoism 4, Judaism 14, Islam 1.3 billion, and Christianity 2 billion. But take a look here. This was actually one of those that was done that I did scan in. They got 15 out of 15, Carolyn Glass. 1986. But you see, she colored the different areas of the world with what they were. Yellow is Orthodox. They're mostly in Russia, down in this area. You'll notice the light green, Confucius, over here. Taoists are over in this area and in Sri Lanka. Sorry, not Taoists, Buddhists. Taoists are light blue over in here in China, and you have dark blue tribal religions, some spots, some other areas, some over in this area too. You have Shinto purple, that's over in Japanese islands. Your dark green is Islam. Islam has made quite, is found in substance in many of these areas. Orange is Mormonism, basically here, and then pink is Protestants, and red are Catholics. So most of America is pink. California should probably be red too. But anyway, Mexico, a lot of these areas are red where Catholicism dominated. So that's what they did as a study so that they would be able to see hands-on what it was like. So I put this in there for you. Numbers of adherents, I just read that to you. You can see all those. That's in your handout. Three major locations, geographical locations, where the major religions spring from are only three major areas. One, they come from India. Hinduism, Buddhism, Jainism. By the way, Jainism is not in our course. It's in my book, but not in the course. And Jainism, it's interesting, about 8 million members around the world. We're insignificant. What are we? About 20,000. You've never heard of Jainism. They probably never heard of you either. But they sweep the floor. They don't believe. And they strain their water to make sure they don't drink anything that has anything living object in it. And they sweep the floor when they walk so they don't step on anything and kill it. Some strange things that are found. But they are a spin-off of Hinduism, Buddhism, that area. Hinduism and Buddhism from India and Jainism. Far East or the Orient, you have Taoism, Confucianism, and Shinto. They come from the Far East. And then the Near East, you have Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. All right, I want to get into the biblical overview. What does the Bible say about religion, since this we're talking about religion in general? What does the Bible say? In the beginning, we find there was original monotheism, right? Genesis 1 and verse 1, to believe in a supreme God. Supreme God that is composed of two. Genesis 1:1, in the beginning, God. So the first four words, the fourth word in the Bible says, in the beginning is God. So what aspect of religion do we have? We have a supreme being. Okay, a supreme being, one to whom we can look. Mr. Segley gave a really great presentation here about why the proofs of God, things they've found, and how they find in some of these research into DNA, how could that have been? That many of our cells are programmed with so much programming in them, it's incredible. How could these cells have developed all that programming all by themselves? It took somebody superior, just like if you see a data processing program written. Who did that? Did it just happen all by itself? Think for a minute. If everything just happened in the world, what would the world be like? When things are left to no care and no tending to it, do they improve or do they get worse? I can tell you they get worse. I had a garden in Texas. And Mr. Gary Richards and I decided to make this garden together on the campus. And so we had this plot, and we would go down there and we'd use this rototiller. We rototilled this whole thing, and we raked it, and we planted all our beans and carrots and whatever we both wanted to make. And we took care of it. We'd get on, we'd weed it, we took care of it. But I went on vacation one time, and then he went on vacation one time. And we came back. We couldn't find the beans. We couldn't tell the beans from the weeds. We had basically had to go search it because it had so overtaken the garden. Left to its own, without any planning, without any intervention, without any superior person there to keep an eye on it, it went to nothing. Things don't just happen. If you throw cards up in the air, will they just automatically land in the same pile? Even just 52 cards. What are the chances? If you fling them into the air, all 52 cards will land just like you bought a brand new, fresh deck. Probably, I don't know what. I don't even. Is there a possibility? You could try it again and again and again. You might get quite a few of them land in the same stack, depending on. If you just fling them in the air, you know they call that 52 pickup. If you fling them into the air, what are the chances of all 52 going to land in the same spot, one on top of the other? Very remote. Well, you know, we're talking about 52 cards. When you talk about human life, when you talk about animal life and vegetable life, and you talk about inanimate objects, how did they all just happen with the properties that they do? How does it happen that vegetation makes oil? How does it happen that rocks buried beneath the ground over a period of time produce beautiful diamonds, gold? How does that all happen? There's a God in heaven who set it into motion. So in the beginning, God. So there was original monotheism in the beginning. Genesis 1:31, God tells us everything he did was good. Everything he made was good. Animals and everything else. I attended a class before I went to Ambassador College. I was just getting interested. It was like 18 going on 19. It was like 18 or 17. Let's see. 1950. It was 17 going on 18. And I had to study, because we had to take a religion course at this other school every Saturday morning. I went to school on Saturday, and I was wrong, and I wasn't in the church yet. That's why I quit going to that college. But we had to take a religion course, and Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and Saturday was the last. We had to have questions ready. So I read the correspondence course, and I would go in, and I would ask this man questions. I got an A for the course, but I was always putting him on the spot. So if you say there's 1,000 years between each one of these days, they say, well, how long were the days of creation? As long as they need to be to fit into evolution. And I said, well, wasn't this created on that day, and the bees weren't created on this day, and how could that have been pollinated if it didn't have the insects and the bees to help spread it? Oh, well, we don't want to consider that. Don't certain animals depend on certain birds to help them, and certain birds depend on certain animals to help them? How would that occur if they weren't around for 1,000 years between each other? He couldn't answer that. And I oftentimes would stump him, and here I am, a novice at the scriptures, and here he is, a doctor of theology, teaching this class. He could not answer my questions. He gave me an A, because I was interested in the class, and I always had questions. Others didn't. God's way is, and God says, I made everything and I made it good. God saw that everything he made, he saw that everything that he made, and behold, it was very good. The evening and the morning were the sixth day. So who made it? Who is the superintending being who made the heavens and the earth? God did. Genesis 2, verses 1 to 2. Here we find some guidelines for humankind. Chapter 2, verses 1 and 2. So remember, the heart and core of religion is what? A supreme being, and you have those who are supportive or submissive to, and you have some rules and regulations and forms by which to worship him. So Genesis 2, verse 1, thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them were made. And on the seventh day, God ended his work which he had made, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had made, in verse 3, and God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it. He set it apart. But why did he do that? For himself? God gets tired? No, the Bible says he never gets tired. Why did he rest then? To set man an example and to show them on that day is the day of rest. And it wasn't one in seven. He didn't say, you know, a good principle. He didn't say that. He said the seventh day. I often was given this analogy. Can you keep cold water hot? I give you a pot of cold water and I say, please keep this cold water hot. Can you keep cold water hot? You can't. You must make cold water hot, then you can keep it hot. So if I gave you a pot of hot water, how could you keep it hot? Put it on the stove. So if something is made hot to start with, you can keep it hot. But if it's cold to start with, you can't keep it hot. You could make it hot and then keep it hot. A day must be made holy in order to keep it holy. The Sabbath day was made holy by the only one who has the power to make anything holy, God. God made the Sabbath day holy, therefore you and I can keep it holy. He didn't make Sunday holy. So no matter how much you try to make Sunday holy, you can't. Just like if it's cold water to start with, it's cold. It's not his day. And he's very specific about the seventh day. In fact, in the Ten Commandments, he says, keep the Sabbath day holy because in 6 days I made the heavens and the earth, and the seventh day I rested. So it's the same seventh day, the commandment that he had right at the very beginning. So he sanctified it. What's it mean, sanctify? He made it special. He set it apart for humankind because that in it he had rested from all his work which God created and made. And so you find God right at the beginning making a Sabbath day. He also gave them a command not to eat of that tree in the midst of the garden. Genesis 2:3, the day of worship was established. Genesis 4. Was there a way of worshiping him? Did they know how, if they wanted to do something special to God, did they know how to do it? Because worship sometimes involves sacrifice. Worship sometimes involves offerings. Worship sometimes involves giving to that deity. So Genesis 4, verse 1, and Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived, and she bore Cain, and said, I have gotten a man from the Lord. I've gotten a man from the Lord. It means acquisition, Cain. It means I got somebody. Verse 2 says, and she again bore his brother Abel. Now, I always take it that Cain and Abel were the first two, but it doesn't really say that. It just says she again. It doesn't say she couldn't have had others in between. But we'll take it that they were just the first two. And again, she bore his brother Abel, and Abel was a keeper of sheep, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. So Cain grew vegetables and Abel took care of the animals. Verse 3, and in the process of time it came to pass that Cain brought of the fruit of the ground an offering to the Lord. And Abel, he also brought of the firstlings of the flock and of the fat thereof. And you read in the Bible where they're to offer firstlings. But also you read in the Bible where they're supposed to offer the tithe or the first fruits of their. It didn't say that. It just said he brought of the fruit of the ground. It didn't say he brought the first fruit of the ground. Where Abel brought the firstlings, didn't he? So he says, Abel, he also brought the firstlings of the flock and of the fat thereof. And the Lord had respect to Abel and his offering, but to Cain and his offering, he had not respect. Now, if I say to you, we're taking up a collection for Crystal. We want to buy her some pencils up here. Taking a collection, and I just say, please give what you want. And some of you only have maybe a nickel, and you throw in a nickel. And I say, a nickel? I'm not pleased with that offering. But see, if I don't tell you what the offering amount is, or is expected, how can I be displeased with you? So why would God have been displeased with Cain's offering when he didn't give him any rules? If they didn't know any rules of offering, then he would have been satisfied with anything, right? But Abel gave of the firstlings. So I believe that God taught them, that they knew what to give. Therefore, God was displeased with Cain's offering because Cain did not give first fruits. Or Cain did not give of the first tithe. Or Cain did not give of that which is the best. He may have pulled out some little straggly fruit and given it to God. Whatever he did, it did not please God. Abel's did. So again, we find they were offering sacrifices to God. He had respect to Abel's, but he did not have respect, verse 5, to Cain's. The point of showing this, though, is to show you there were rules and there was the worship. Remember what religion is. Having a supreme being, having those to worship the supreme being, having laws and rules, and having a form of worship. And so they were bringing an offering to God. Cain's was not acceptable. Genesis 3, backtracking a little bit. Genesis 3, we find Satan as the serpent influences Eve. So we see false religion is introduced with Satan as God. Genesis chapter 3 and verse 1. We're talking about how did religion begin, right? Talking about religion in general. The serpent, now the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field, which the Lord God had made. He said to the woman, notice how Satan the devil is clever. And you'll hear me many times be warning you, be encouraging you, not to go down the path of being a conniver, not going down the path of being a deceiver, not going down the path of trying to get as much from people as you can, not going down the path of trying to pull the wool over people's eyes, as they say sometimes as an expression, not trying to get away with as much as you can get away with, not trying to be so sly that you become deceitful. You'll hear me say that many times, all right? Satan the devil is subtle. That's his way. He tries to be slippery. He tries to spin things in a way that makes him come out the best. He said to the woman, yay, has God, notice how he phrases this, has God said you shall not eat of every tree of the garden? God is deprived. Did God tell you you can't eat of all the trees here? And notice Eve's remark, because Eve was relatively naive and innocent. And the woman said to him, we may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden. Oh yeah, we can eat of all. No, you're wrong. No, we can eat. God told us we could eat of all of them. And then, but she said, but that only that one, the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden. God has said, you shall not eat of it, neither shall you touch it, lest you die. So God gave her an order. God gave a command. God gave instruction. You could say to disobey God would be sin. He gave her instruction. She would be disobeying her father, her creator, her maker. And so verse 4, and the serpent said to the woman, you shall not surely die. God is lying to you. Listen to me. I know better. Listen to me, not him. I'll let you have all of them. You could choose anything. You can go any way you want to. You don't have to listen to him. And you know what the tree was that they were denied of? The knowledge of good and evil. And really, when you come down to it, it was symbolic of being able to choose for yourself what's good and evil. See, we can choose ourselves whether we will do good or evil. That's our choice. But to decide what's good and evil is not our choice. That's God's. God tells us, this is good, this is evil. This is good, this is evil. This is good, this is evil. You can say, I'm not going to do the good and sin. Or you can slip and stumble and say, I'm not going to do the good and sin. But it's your choice, but it's not your choice to decide. What Satan was getting them to decide, you can make up your own rules. You can decide. You see secularism, which I'll go into next, exactly what they're telling you to do. You make up your own rules. You decide. And what humankind has done ever since is made God in their own image. You know, I don't think God would mind if I keep Christmas. I mean, what's wrong with giving a few little gifts, and what's wrong with worshiping? What's wrong with worshiping God? I know we put, I know Christmas was pagan, but we're not pagan anymore, and they're not doing this to worship God, worship other gods. They just have this Christmas tree and all the ornaments and all the celebrations that went along with that former God. Like people who take up yoga and some, well, not yoga, but yoga is the beginnings of some of these Eastern religions. It's a way of relaxing you so you can allow the gods can have more opportunity with you. And I'm not saying just to do a yoga exercise is going to do that. But frankly, I don't personally care to do yoga exercises. Maybe part of it is because I can't get my chubby little legs over one another and sit in that cross-legged position. But I don't encourage it, because there is behind yoga, the physical yoga, is a purpose. The spiritual yoga. Right. Right. So a comment made just for those in tape land or CD land or whatever on this recording. Question was, Satan's tried to destroy the character of God and saying to the people, God doesn't want you to enjoy this. God doesn't want you to have that. God is keeping you from enjoying things. God never keeps you from enjoying anything that's good for you. Never. A loving father always wants to do what's best for his children. However, a loving father may say eating ice cream 6 times a day is not good for you, even though ice cream tastes wonderful. 6 times a day, a wise father would say, is not good for you. 5 times might be all right. Even 5 times is not good. But it's not good for you. See, it's not good for you to eat too much sugar. It's not good for you to eat too much junk food. A good father will tell you that. Okay? Try to help you through that. Not just anything goes. And God the Father never denies us one thing that's good for us. In fact, he's all, hope. He wants above all things that we may prosper and be in health. 3 John 2, by the way, that scripture. He wants above all things. That's what he wants. He wants us to be in good health and prosper. So Satan the devil enters the picture. He substitutes. He says, you won't surely die. You know what? You have an immortal soul. You can't die. You can't die. God's fooling you. Come on, touch this. Come on, come on. You have this. I have this tape that coaxes, where it's a play on where, and he's coaxing, this play acting, and this tape. The one's like Satan saying, come on, just touch it. Come on, you can do it. Look, I'm sitting in the tree and I'm not dead. I'm touching it. And we don't know it was an apple, right? Even though we call this an Adam's apple. Got stuck in his throat. That's why we men all have larger necks than others, than girls do typically. Got caught in our throat. Eve ate hers down, gave it to Adam. It got stuck in Adam's throat, okay? Adam's apple. Doesn't say. It could be an Adam's banana. It could be an Adam's peach. But you tell somebody, look at your Adam's banana there. It doesn't look very good. Yeah, we don't do that. But where does the idea that was an apple? Doesn't say apple, does it? This is fruit. Okay. 2 Corinthians 4:4, Satan the devil has blinded the minds of individuals. Satan the devil entered the scene right away, got man going his way, thinking his way, doing his way. 2 Corinthians 4:4 does what he can to blind the minds of people. In whom the God of this world has blinded the minds of them that which believe not, lest the light of the glorious gospel of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine to them. What's his purpose? Keep people from coming to the truth. Keep people from knowing true religion. And turn people off on religion as quickly as I can in other ways. Andrew? They did. Because God didn't make robots. But you know what? You don't know what wrong is unless you either read about it, see it, or do it. And if I'm living in a perfect world, I'm not seeing it. And there's no encouragement to do it. So if everybody here did, if everybody in this room did everything right, all the time, it would make it very hard for people who want to do wrong. But you don't provide for them to do wrong. You don't enable them to do wrong. You would warn them about if they even look like they're going to start to do wrong, because you want to do right and you want to help your brother do right. So they didn't know it. Sure, they had the. He didn't create robots, and he didn't create them perfect in mind or character. He created them perfect as human beings, but not mind and character. Character is a choice. And humankind, and I believe He knew they would fall eventually. Just how soon they fell was surprising, and how far they fell before he had to bring the flood was very surprising. How deep man could go. So God said, man, really grieves me. I don't think he would have been grieved at man if he expected them to go that low as individuals. So Ephesians 2:2 calls him the prince of the power of the air. Revelation 12:9 says, Satan the devil has deceived the whole world. He's blinded the minds. He has ministers. 2 Corinthians 11:13 calls ministers his ministers. And in 2 Corinthians 11:4, he's taught them another Jesus. I'll finish this up next time. We have just a few more verses. And then I'll show you the slide or the presentation on secularism, because I want to put that out right away so you could be thinking about it as we cover all these other religions. Thank you for your attention. Have a good break right now. And don't forget to give us some thoughts in prayer as we go up to do the broadcast.